Welcome to Behind the Curtain, Nashville's Movers, Shakers,
and Tastemakers,
brought to you by Cord Real Estate, your key to the heart of Nashville. I'm Steve Luther alongside my co-host, Van Hoy.
Here we peel back the layers of Nashville's vibrant scene, sitting down with the innovators, creators, and leaders who shape our city. From music to business and everything in between, we dive into the journeys that have brought them to where they are today.
We're here to uncover the stories behind the success, the passion driving their pursuits, and why they've chosen Nashville as their stage. It's about the people who dream big, push boundaries, and make this city truly unique.
So join us as we explore the heart and soul of Nashville through the eyes of those who know it best.
All right, joining us today on Behind the Curtain, Nashville's Movers, Shakers, and Tastemakers, is Pashoy Zaki, the Chief Relations Officer at Global Wealth Syndications. Yep. Pashoy embodies the spirit of innovation and strategic growth in the realm of private equity, with a focus on M&A transactions, fuel, gold, and the import-export of essential commodities like milk, sugar, canola oil, and beef. His journey from roles in customer service to leading positions within the financial sector highlights his adaptability and foresight in navigating complex markets. With a keen eye for detail and a deep understanding of global finance dynamics, Pashoy is reshaping the landscape of private equity through Global Wealth Syndications. That sounds impressive.
Thank you.
From right here in Nashville.
Yep, right here, hometown. Yes.
Man.
So let's just start off with an easy one, because I'm sure a lot of people are like, well, what is private equity? What does that even mean?
Yeah. So private equity, a lot of people get private equity and venture capital confused. Private equity, when you look at the sector, we don't focus on just money injections. So a lot of companies and startups, all they're looking for is, you know, capital injections to help them with marketing, to help them with scaling their businesses, or to help them find leasing places or whatever it is. In private equity, we look at the whole business as a whole. So we look at, yes, the money that needs to be capitalized and injected into the company, but we also do consult on restructuring either their marketing strategy or scaling or finding new business opportunities, new business, strategic advisement, basically.
So you get involved.
Yeah. And so we don't just venture capital. Really, all they do is they really just focus on money injection. Private equity, we really do focus on, again, the gold transactions, the fuel transactions, the M&A transactions, reverse pipes, so taking companies out from public back to private or from private to public. Mm-hmm. So we do everything basically as a whole, and we look at everything as a whole instead of just the money side of things.
So I normally would think of somebody in this position as like an older person, like that's been around the block a while.
What are you
like,
trying to say?
You're a young guy.
Are you ageist?
No, I'm not ageist. I'm just saying it seems unusual to me for such a young guy to be involved with an equity firm, a private equity firm. I find that very interesting. Yeah. Has it just been, what kind of led you to the path of getting into that?
Yeah. So it wasn't something that I was like, you know, when I was 15, I was like, oh, I want to get into private equity. That's my dream. My dream was to always be financially free. That was just always a dream.
Because you grew up here in Brentwood, right?
Well, I grew up actually, my parents, when they came from Egypt, we first started in Millwood in Antioch. And then we moved to Mount Juliet. And then from Mount Juliet, we moved to Brentwood. So I've seen my parents go from, little to nothing to, my dad getting his MBA and then getting a step up at his job.
The American dream.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, come here from somewhere and make it.
Exactly. And so I wanted to follow my dad's footsteps. He's one of the greatest people on earth. And, back to the whole age thing. It came for me when I first started living in Brentwood and seeing everybody with their supercars and all these nice houses. And we weren't, having three supercars in our garage starting with. We do have great cars. We have a great lifestyle, but it almost made me feel somewhat like, kind of mad. Like, how could somebody have a $400,000 car on the street? And it's just like, how do they do that? And that really started to, make me feel really optimistic about how do these people really do that? It's not like some people, they get it from their trust fund or this or that. But mostly the majority of people around here really grinded very hard for their American dream. And they're big time CEOs or they're very high up in their jobs.
Right.
And that's what kicked me off when I started networking at a young age, figuring out that these guys really saw a lot in me. And it gave me the fire to keep going at a young age and to be at this moment that I am right now.
So you were exposed to opportunities.
I had to be exposed. I mean, when you're on the street, when you're going to car meets, especially Lamborghini Bowls and Bagels, that's a spot. A lot of people are like, where do you find these people? There's literally events that all these supercars go to. Cars and coffee. There's networking events at the Virgin Hotel. There's there's so much things you can do, especially just being here right now. That's essentially me networking with you guys, figuring out what you guys do, what I do. And the viewers for sure, telling them what I do. That's the area that we live in. That's why Nashville is one of the greatest areas to be in for sure.
There's a very old adage, probably older than you are.
Yeah.
My shoes are older than he is.
your network equals your net worth.
Absolutely.
It's all about the connections you can make.
Absolutely.
You seem to have made a lot of really amazing connections in a very short amount of time.
Yeah.
I mean, how did you figure out how to go about doing that? And how did you get plugged in to some of these events that you're talking about?
Yeah. So,
doesn't it go back to Chipotle?
Yeah, it does go back.
Hey,
so I worked, I went to Ravenwood High School. That was my high school that I went to. And a buddy of mine, his name is Mina, introduced me to a job because I really was just going after business, trying to drop ship and do stocks and do this and that. I just failed and failed and failed. He's like, just come get a job with me, you know? So I got a job at Chipotle and I was in the back sometimes, but I was mostly on the front. And the reason why my GM put me on the front, I was super good with people. If the line was slow, I was still interacting with customers and telling them, hey, we'll be right with you and all that good stuff. And then I got moved to the cashier, which was my favorite spot because I can have real conversations now. I'm not always putting the bowl in, beans and the chicken. I'm more focusing on the price, right?
Yeah.
People at Chipotle, I learned in sales because I used to work in sales door to door, which is one of the hardest things you could do learning objection and understanding people's guards, if they're up or if they're down. And if you're at Chipotle, your guard is fully down. You're hungry. You want to eat. So you're interacting, unless you're hangry. I've dealt with those people. When I was at the cashier, I used to, you know, see people wearing a Rolex, or I'd look out the window and I see them pull up in a Lamborghini, and I would basically kind of take a picture with my eyes and be like, okay, when this guy gets a cashier, I'm going to ask this guy and say, hey man, I love your car. You know, what do you do for a living?
Sure.
And there's this famous guy on TikTok. His name is Daniel Mack.
Oh yeah.
And he goes around asking supercar owners, what do you do for work? What do you do for work? And I thought it was the most cliche thing ever, but
he's made a whole career doing that.
Exactly. That's literally what he does for work. And so when I started doing that to people at Chipotle, I met people like William Barron. I met people like Andrew Kramer. I met people, all these great guys. And I just asked them what they did for work. But what I made sure I did is got their phone number. So that after I got off the shift, I'd say, hey, William, you know, love that conversation we have. I'd love to extend the conversation for coffee tomorrow at 8 a.m.
Wow.
You know, the Well Coffee Shop.
How was that received? I mean, if somebody asked me for my phone number when I'm paying for my my food, I don't know if I would,
you know,
maybe I might give you my card.
Yeah.
I mean, that's possible.
Listen, there's been a lot of people, I will say that.
Charmed them.
It's not the easiest to just get somebody's phone number.
Yeah.
Work. It's hard. But it's having that sales and you understanding that first, you at least have to compliment them. You have to tell them, I love that watch. You know, you make them feel like they're home. Make them feel like when people get successful, they love talking about it because it's so hard to get where they are.
Well, especially if they worked hard to get there.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's certain questions that you can't ask. Like, oh, yeah, how much are you worth? Like, that's not a question you right off the bat ask. But you want to compliment them. You want them to feel like her. Yeah, sometimes, I hope Chipotle doesn't watch this video. Man, I'd slide him a bag of chips. Make sure, you know, we're good. But yeah,
like they needed some free chips, they appreciated it, I'm sure.
It was definitely a challenge. But when I started at Chipotle, it was understanding that I was getting the job done, but I was also doing what I loved, which was talking to people. I really never thought it was going to turn into a business at that point. But after I sat down with these people, I couldn't tell you the amount of industries that are in my phone, from artists to bankers to singers to actors to real estate. It goes down the list. And
you were networking.
Yeah, absolutely. So
do you feel like being in Nashville has helped with that? Because I feel like Nashville, maybe because of the music industry, it's a lot more collaborative here than I've experienced. And, you know, I grew up in Houston. I lived up in Maryland for a while. There's a different environment here. I think lends itself. People are friendlier.
The true South.
There's more conversation. You know, has that been a factor, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is definitely not an area like it is Miami or California, where people are more to themselves and they're more influencers. And, you know, no offense to them. I mean, I'm the first person to like their videos on the internet. You know, you pulling up with the red McLaren or Lamborghini, I'm liking the video. People around here, though, are more family oriented and they have kids and they want to see their kids grow. So, and they're also people that grinded their whole lives. And this area is not a cheap place to live in. I mean, it's definitely rising. So it's an area that takes in people that work very, very hard for their money, and they deserve to, you know, live in a beautiful 15,000 square foot mansion. I mean, they work their whole life. So Nashville, you know, we get the term the volunteer state of Tennessee. I could tell you this, this is the truest statement around here in Nashville. People will help you.
If you
genuinely seek help, whether it's in anything, spirituality and mental health or in money or in school or in education,
that's right,
or real estate or anything, people will give you the time of day. Yes, there are some people that are ignorant and they're to themselves, right, and that's fine. We just move on with our lives.
That's how Steve and I met, working in a nonprofit,
doing some
things and volunteer.
Yeah. And so, you know, Nashville, I could tell you, I don't want to move out of here. And I might have to relocate to New York for work or whatever.
Or have multiple locations.
Yeah. But this will be where I grow my family.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Global Wealth, you guys do a pretty wide array of transactions. There's a pretty diverse range there.
Yeah.
How do you manage the complexities of all of that? What's the skill set to do what you do?
Yeah. So first, when it comes down to it, you have to find the other piece of the transaction. So you can't just start and say, I do gold and I do fuel. Well, it's not like I do fuel. It's not like I house the fuel. I have people that do fuel, right? I have people that own refineries. I have people that, you know, have these big oil rigs in the ocean, and they dig and they find it, and then they, you know, extract it, and then they refine it, and then we go find buyers for it. It's through the networking game where it got me to the point where I can say I can do transactions like that. I know people that have gold mines. I know people in Kenya that have this. I know what areas to stay away from. I know where the scammers are at. I know where the legit people are at. I know Brazil got sanctioned for things. It's all about just networking and doing that. But the biggest part about, you know, Global Wealth Syndications is its organization. We have a CRM system, which I think everybody has to have a CRM system. We use Wealthbox, and it's the best thing ever. We put all of our deal flow in there, put all of our contacts in there. And anytime we update something, everybody gets a notification about it and what the next step is and what to do after that and what's the goal at the end. Private equity is one of those things where you throw so many things at the wall and only three will stick, and then, you know, you make your money and you move on. We're trying to change that industry. We want to be able to, when some client comes to us and says, I want to restructure my business, I want better marketing, I want injection of capital, I want venture debt, I want a loan, I want an asset-based lending loan or something, we want to focus on that client. No matter how much we have on our plate, we will make time for that. And that's why I truly am happy every morning to wake up, to go to work, because I know I'm helping somebody with their American dream.
Sure. So what's your role in all that? I see your official title is Chief Relations Officer. Yeah, so yeah. I'm the Chief Experience Officer here at Court Real Estate. So tell me, what does the Chief Relations Officer do?
I think when it came down to my business partners, I love relationships. It came back to that whole networking story of me, you know, knowing how to talk to people, knowing that when people put up their money for an investment, it isn't all sunshines and rainbows. We have to take care of that client. And when there's things that are maybe delayed, or when there are things that we need to talk to them about, I'm the guy that calls them. It is a tough position being at 19 to call somebody about an investment or a restructuring of business or venture debt. But I'm more, I understand people. I've been through the shoes of many people that maybe have lost money, made money, stressing, non-stressing. And I understand the exact words and how to phrase, how to speak to these people. So getting the title Chief Relations Officer, it's just more of dealing with relationships. So connecting people together. My business partners would bring me let's just say a dairy farm. And I would go out, I'd go on LinkedIn, and I'd go find vendors from Restaurant Depot. I'd go find the sales reps. I'd go message them. I'd set up a meeting on Google Meet. I'd talk to them first, and then I'd bring them to the table. That's basically my role in the whole thing. And I almost guarantee my business partners, once you put me in front of a person, I will close them right at the table. I mean, it's just, I take no for, you know, I can't walk away knowing that I missed something. I will always come prepared to a meeting. Unlike this, it's kind of more like a free ball type of thing, which is awesome. I love these things too. But I have to make sure I do my due diligence on absolutely.
Right.
I'm the first guy to be like, Shoy, are you sure this guy's legit? And if I give him a yes, you know, they will go in blindly with me saying yes, because they trust me. And I have to keep that integrity, and I have to keep that reputation, especially around town. It's a small town, but once you work hard and people trust you, it's very easy to get in the door.
Oh yeah. Nashville, they think it's a big city, but it is still a small town.
Not until you get to like New York, or you'll get any street there.
Yeah. You mentioned restructuring. That's a focus that you guys have, is restructuring businesses. What are some of the common challenges that lead someone to, you know, approach a private equity firm to reach out to you guys? Like what kind of things are they typically going through that you guys can step in and help with?
Yeah. So a lot of people, they don't have, I guess, and it's not to be cocky, but they don't have the skill set to go out and get these many connections. You know, they're just, sure. They're just business owners and they're oriented in their own business and they only look at themselves, and that's totally
fine. They're very focused on their business.
Exactly. But when they come to hurdles, like they need help, they need somebody for marketing, they need somebody for consulting, they need debt, or they need to go to an institutional bank. They don't have the outlets to go out and find the best person in marketing. Like, I mean, when you work with somebody, you want to make sure they're quality. It doesn't matter how much they are. It doesn't matter what they look like. It doesn't matter anything. It's quality. In a business, it's like a baby. And I think about it. If you don't feed it, right? Or if you drop it, it's over, right?
So if I'm watching this at home, what kind of business might I own that I would want to come to you?
It could literally be anything.
Give me an example.
I'm not looking for people
just like...
Oh, names?
No names. Oh. Just like what kind of business? Like if I'm a real estate company or if I'm I make widgets or if I own a gas station.
I mean, you can have a clothing line. You could have a lawn care business.
Yeah.
You could be all the way up there. You could be one of the biggest real estate firms that do commercial real estate, skyscrapers. You could be out internationally. It could be anything.
So if I'm mowing lawns to building ginormous buildings, I can call you if I want to take my business to the next level.
I mean, if you really do, I mean, it all comes down to who can I put in your circle that can help.
Okay.
It's not going to be my hand that I put on the business that obviously grows it.
You're relating,
right?
Not a building, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, I try to connect the right people inside of exactly what they're at.
Yeah.
So regardless if it's marketing, for instance, I have a guy right up top of my head, you know, here in Franklin, best marketer ever. He does all this, you know, Gary Ashton stuff. You see all his billboards out here.
He just dropped Gary Ashton's name. Whoa.
I don't know the guy personally, but I do know.
Oh, man, he's got good taste in billboards. I'll tell you that.
I do know the person that, you know, worked with him.
Yeah.
So, you know, anyways, it comes down to people's track record. I make sure that whatever I bring to the table is going to be quality.
I'll never
come back on. If I put somebody at the table, I can walk away and feel, you know, comfortable. Like, okay, this is going to work out.
I like it.
Yeah.
So let's take a different spin on that question. Yeah. You know, a lot of times, you know, entrepreneurs, in order to scale, need to bring in some private money.
Right.
What are some tips? Like, what are some things that they can do to make themselves more attractive for some of this private money?
Yeah. So before I go into, you know, raising capital and private money, so you have to be really careful with, you know, raising capital with the SEC and all this stuff and FINRA. It has to be regulated. You have to file a Reg D. You have to get a 506B and C. We've done all of our due diligence because raising capital without a Series 7 is a pain. Okay. You have to make sure that you do it right.
So you're legal.
Well, yeah. But we're not financial advisors. Again, we're consultants. So we don't handle the money, but we do connect the person to do the transaction. But we got to make sure that we're in compliance. Just so I don't misrepresent or missay anything, that people just go out, oh, I can raise $1 million and I'll be okay. You know, you got to be careful. You got to make sure you know what you're doing. So, you know, back to your question, how to be more attractive.
To you.
To me, I guess to say pitch decks are a big thing in this world. It's the first thing that people see when looking at a business. And when I look at something, I want to see a good pitch deck. And a good pitch deck shows that if you did it, that you were organized and every piece of information was on there, but it wasn't clustered everywhere. That shows me a lot about who you are and who your business is. Anytime you're pitching anything, that pitch deck better be on point, because if it's not, we're not moving on and we're not going
to. So you're not going to help them create the pitch deck. Want them to come to you with a good pitch deck already.
Well, yeah, no. Yeah. Okay. I mean, so if we're going to consult for them, they at least have to be prepared, whether it's exactly what they need, what they're using the money for. If they're using it for this, what guy are you going to, and why I choose my guy over yours, because your guy is charging 100x more than what I'll do.
Right.
And it's based. It comes back to the point of, you have to make sure that when you're asking for something, you're fully ready. Right, of what you're asking. I don't need your business to be $100 million for me to accept it, but we don't accept every single thing that comes into the door. We can deal with any industry, but we've turned down some people that have come to us and just like, I want to raise this capital, but I just want to raise it because I think marketing would be good. I mean, you got to let me know really what's really going on. And then he told me, oh, I got this UCC filing, I got this going on, I got that going on, I'm sanctioned on this. I don't want to deal in those troubled waters, right? So definitely. Being able to be more attractive, one is, you know, having a good, you know, profile on yourself, first of all. When I look up your first and last name, I better not be going to jail or anything like that. there better be no sanctions on your company, no complaints. We'll go through Yelp. We'll go through everything. Make sure everything is clean and
right
before we work with you.
So, need to have your nose clean.
Absolutely. 100%.
So working with things like gold, fuel trades, those kinds of things, you got to stay ahead of market trends. Mm-hmm. I remember recently reading about a bunch of guys getting into trouble with oil when the price of oil was moving so quickly, and right. They were going to have to take delivery of all this oil, never intended to take delivery of it.
Yeah,
so there were all kinds of issues around it, but. How do you keep track of those market trends, and do you have any predictions for us for what we might be seeing down the road?
Ooh, we like predictions.
You know, oil and gas and gold, for instance. You know, when you look at gold, you look at what the price of it was in 1990 or back then. You know,
way back then. The old days.
I was out of high school, but you know, back then.
You could see that actually gold has actually been somewhat on a downturn in the last 40 years, if I'm not mistaken. Like it's not one of the best investments to make in gold or in gas or in oil.
Right, all
any commodities. I mean, it's all commodities. Like Kevin O'Leary loves commodities. I watch Shark Tank all the time.
Why does Mr. Wonderful always come up?
Oh, really?
In conversations.
Yeah, I love Mr. Wonderful. It's always like, goodness. You're dead to me. And I'm just like, I love it. But he deals in the commodity space. It's super, super volatile. But when you're dealing with oil and gas, you have to be very, very careful. Or gold. I mean, you got gold coming out of Africa, and you're dealing with the Kenya government, and you're doing this and you're doing that. You got to be very careful. You have to understand who you're working with. In these industries, you have to make sure that you're connected to the right people. And we are direct to a couple of trade desks. So a trade desk is basically where you can have a certain commodity like gold or fuel. And if you want to transact on the two, you can go to a trade desk, which we know some people own a trade desk, so we don't have to do the deal ourselves. We just take them to the desk, and then the desk transacts with them on whatever they do. And the desk transacts with countries, with small companies, with big companies. We know people that work at Shell and BP and all these places. So we make sure that they're quality people. My prediction on oil and gas, I think there it's
you don't be, have to do this.
I don't even know if I want to step into that, but just based off of what's going on in the the world and the seas, for instance, getting it over
talk about troubled waters.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's I don't want to talk too much about it. I just don't. It gets political and this and that. But I do think that the supply and demand is a big, big part of the price of oil and gas, and especially transportation. When you're wanting to find tanks to put those in and storage, it comes down to the smallest amount of stuff to tell the price of gas and oil. So, yeah.
You know, I read the other day that Elon is shifting gears. He's going hydrogen now.
No. There's no way.
I don't know if that was legit or but that's what I saw.
We're not going to be driving around on some hydrogen bomb. It's I don't see it.
But hey, it's Elon though.
It's Elon. It's Elon. Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't put anything past him. It's kind of like betting against Steve Luther.
I wish I could remember where I read it, but it had to do with issues with battery production and disposal of the batteries once they're spent.
Don't get me started on that.
Yeah, there was. I don't know if it's legit or not. You never can tell until it actually comes out. But yeah, that was the talk. Is now he's kind of shifting into hydrogen, which the
let's wait.
The output got his, of that
he
is
has
water.
His trucks out there, and they're working properly.
I think they've got one here in Nashville now. I'm pretty sure I saw a video at the Cars and Coffee. Somebody pulled up with a Cybertruck.
Oh, yeah. I just got back from L.A. My son, he saw two. I'm like, why didn't you point it out? I wanted to see it.
Yeah
that's a couple
of them. It's like a DeLorean from my childhood, up in the air.
Yeah. No, they're huge. I heard they're pretty big. Yeah.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it.
So a lot of intricacies around M&A transactions. Walk us through like something recently that you've done. Now, obviously don't give names or, mm-hmm. protect the innocent, but kind of walk us through like a deal you've done recently that sort of exemplifies what global syndication is about.
Yeah. So I mean, I wish I could
start Global Wilson.
Yeah. I wish I could speak more on M&A transactions. None of them have purely closed yet, so I'm not. Okay. I can't really. If it hits the media, we're all screwed, you know, because M&A transactions are pretty big transactions, mergers and acquisitions. I'd love to talk more about it, but once we get things settled and they're actually closed, you'll probably see it on the media. So yeah.
Maybe. There you go. We are behind the curtain, though.
That is what this is about. Movers, shakers, and tastemakers.
But yeah, that'd be a closed camera type of thing.
I love it.
Yeah.
So speaking of tastemaking, are you in the works to bring anything special to Nashville that we don't have?
That's a big question. Ooh, we're doing that.
I had to ask.
We're trying to see what we can get. You know?
Yes.
I think in different states.
Inquiry minds want to know.
Yeah. I mean, in the real estate aspect, it's just still more working on that residential. I do work with William. He's a great guy. He owns Providence Builder Group. He's doing his small spec, residential homes. I love his historical.
When you say small spec, they're beautiful, big homes.
Beautiful spec. Yeah. Just compared to all these Brentwood, 20,000 square foot. But, big things coming to Nashville. I'm not doing the Oracle thing, but I think that's a big thing. It's coming to Nashville.
Hey, I just toured a spec out in LA up in Calabasas. That's, they're planning to charge somewhere between 28 and 30 million for a spec.
Oh my goodness.
Now that's my kind of spec right there.
There was a unique bathroom in the spec.
There, well, yeah, you could say that. Yeah. It's the largest shower on earth.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. But you know, we'll wait and see who ends up buying it.
20 by 30.
Yeah, I don't know how much I'm allowed to say.
I don't know what they're doing in the shower.
Hey, now this is a family program.
That's behind the curtain now.
That is definitely behind the curtain. Oh, my goodness.
But yeah, I think other than, physical stuff that's bringing to Nashville, I really want to be able to, let Nashville know that, it's a good area to be in to really start what you really want to start. Mm. And people are here. They'd love to help you. And so is me. You can find me on Instagram, LinkedIn, and you reached out to me on LinkedIn.
There it is.
Right back out the second you texted. And I'm willing to do that for a lot of people, unless I'm not having 100,000 people coming to
me. Right.
I don't want to be the famous guy. I don't want to be a celebrity. I just want to be the guy that's just like, Peshoy, that guy.
Making it happen.
Good businessman. He's a good businessman around Nashville. But I want that rep around everybody here in Nashville. So if it's something I'm bringing new, I want to build kind of like a team of young guys that really want to go attack it. Not just talk about it, but really act upon it. I've seen guys in high school, go down and go up, and football guys and basketball guys and people that dropped out and stuff. I never fall. And I want to be the first guy that helps them, regardless if they're going.
Well, you've obviously had mentors who brought you on and
absolutely
and brought you into this company, and you're shining. And so sounds like you're open to mentoring others.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's I'm no more than anybody else. I didn't start with money. I didn't have the connection in my back pocket that I just pulled out, and it was perfect. And some people I watch on podcasts, like, 9-to-5s are terrible jobs and all this stuff. You have to go work a 9-to-5. You have to understand how hard it is to make that $16 an hour. But you have to always understand too that time is money. Right. When I was sitting there at Chipotle making $16 an hour, was I looking at $16 or what can I truly do in that hour? Right. When I was working, I can make $16 or I can make another connection. That's $1 million connection right there. I already knew that I was going to make.
It was $1 million connection for you.
Yeah. I mean, anybody can make anything out of anything.
That's good.
It doesn't matter if you're in music, if you're in, entertainment or real estate.
Sure.
You got to make it work. You have to figure out a way to make it. And don't ever, be comfortable. If I was comfortable at Chipotle, I wouldn't be here right now. I wasn't comfortable. Having rice and beans on your shirt and my back is killing me and all this, I just wasn't comfortable. And some people there, it just feels like they're kind of in this robotic stage of another day of work. You got to get in there, make my money, and then head out.
You're out there making it happen. It's impressive.
God willing. Yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you today. If somebody does want to get a hold of you, what's the best way for them to reach out?
Yeah. So my Instagram is Peshoy.Zaki and my LinkedIn is Peshoy.Zaki. I probably won't drop my phone number. I don't know where this is.
My
thing's blowing up, but yeah, you can definitely reach me on there. And I'd love to work with you and anybody that needs help, mentorship, It doesn't matter. I don't need to be looked at as just the money businessman. I could, you know, spirituality, relationships, mentorship.
We could have a whole nother program.
I love helping people in any way. I love it. Absolutely.
Well, thanks for being here. Well,
thanks for having me. Seriously.
Absolutely.
All right. We'll see you guys next time. Well, that's a wrap on today's episode of Behind the Curtain, Nashville's Movers, Shakers,
and Tastemakers.
We hope you've been inspired by the stories of passion, perseverance, and innovation right here in Nashville.
A big thank you to our guests for sharing their journeys and to you, our listeners, for joining us. And of course, our gratitude to Accord Real Estate for making this conversation possible.
Don't forget to follow or subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform.
Thank us.
Yes, you did.
Oh, I guess I did. Well, thank us. Okay.
Like I was saying.
Oh, yeah.
Don't forget to follow or subscribe on your favorite platform to catch every episode and hit that notification bell. We've got plenty more fascinating guests lined up, ready to share their insights and inspirations.
And we love hearing from you. So reach out to us with your thoughts, questions, or suggestions for who you'd like to hear from next.
Until next time, keep chasing your dreams and making your mark in Nashville.
Oh my goodness. Remember, I'm talking to Casey
Kasem. The people behind the scenes that make the city shine.
I love it. Take care. See you behind the curtain.